Well, good morning to all of you. So happy that you're all here today. What an absolutely blessed, beautiful world we live in. Though it has its pain, though it has its sorrow, we are truly blessed to be here. The beauty of this world is fantastic, and those that are coming up on birthdays that perhaps sometimes don't wish to acknowledge them, I want you to keep in mind, this is not something that I'm going to read you from the Bible, but something I was thinking about when he talked about that this morning, and that is this. When you reach another year of age, that's another year that you've been blessed with here on this earth, and another year where you can prove yourself worthy by going through the challenges of this world. Because what challenge will it be when you're standing face to face with God to worship Him? It'll be pretty easy then, won't it? But when you're down here on this earth and tempted by the things of this earth, it's a challenge. And it's something that you're blessed with as you have that opportunity to prove yourself. Well, I did it again. I got about halfway, three quarters of the way through the sermon, and I said, I don't want to do this right now. It's not a bad sermon I was writing. It just wasn't the one that I was being pulled towards. My heart was being pulled elsewhere. Quite obviously, part of it was the tragedy down in Missouri this week. Clint Sparks' death, it affected all of us. It affected me. And death is not the only thing that I'm going to be speaking about this morning. It will be a small part of it. Part of the struggle that I was having, I think, and I kind of talked this over with Teresa last night, was that I was actually in the middle of like three sermons at once, and I couldn't find a way of even putting them together. So I kind of sounded off on her last night, and she did the smart thing, which was nod and let you take care of it. And that's really all I needed. I think I pulled it together. And my desire this morning, what I suspect is that it will be, my presentation will be somewhat confessional. I also hope that it will be instructional and perhaps inspirational. I know you weren't all here, but about 28 years ago, I was about Clay's age, I stood before you all and gave a sermon on a Sunday night. It was on the 23rd Psalm, and it was right after mom had passed away. And so I thought this would be a great way to stand up here and talk about, you know, how you don't need to fear death and all this stuff. And I'll have to apologize to all you guys because I walked out that night. I couldn't finish it. My emotions overcame me. I feel sorry for that little guy. That I was back then, because I didn't really understand how I was going to be affected when I stood in front of all these people and tried to make that presentation. But in particular, that night I was talking about the fourth verse, which, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Back then my understanding was the shadow of death. I was talking about death. I don't think that's really what it's talking about. I think that the shadow of death is a place where you are under great duress, where you're under things that are causing you to be fearful. And you will not be fearful because the Lord is there to comfort you. And as I was reading through Psalms the other night, I discovered that this overcoming fear is addressed very well in the 27th chapter of Psalm. So if you want to turn to the 27th Psalm, I will be referring to that later on, and we can come back to that. So I guess, without really understanding where I was going and what I wanted to say, I guess I'm sort of talking about overcoming our fears this morning. I don't agree with everything that he said or everything that he did, but there's a great quote from Franklin D. Roosevelt in his inaugural speech said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." What exactly does that mean? Well, I suspect that what it is that we shouldn't fear letting our fear control our lives. I think that's what he's talking about there. So really, another way of saying it then is that we have nothing to fear. But what I would like to talk about just a little bit here this morning are some of the things that either I or typically as humans we are fearful of. And naturally, I'll start with what's kind of on my mind, perhaps on your mind, the fear of death. We'll start with the fear of death. I guess I've reached a point where I am not fearful of my passing from this earth. And I think that the only way you can reach that point is becoming confident in where you are in God's world, and what you can do to have your salvation. Because it's not fear of this death that I'm afraid of, it's fear of eternal death. And that's what I'm afraid of. And I'm afraid of it for me, I'm afraid of it for those that are dear to me. And not because I expect them to do that, but because I don't want that for them or for us. So I don't really think about my own death from this earth very much. And there's one reason for that that stands out prominently in my mind. And I as I see more and more the relationships of people in this church, like Wednesday night, Mark had said Grandpa, which I believe he was referring to Carol. Well, I never thought about that being his grandpa. Never thought about it. So he, perhaps others, certainly I feel protected because my grandmother is here in her mid-90s. So if the world is in a natural order, as long as she's here, I'm protected because you don't die before your children. You don't die before your grand... Or, yes, you do die. Sorry, I said it backwards. Your children don't die before you. Your grandchildren don't die before you. So I feel protected. What's the guarantee of that? There's nothing at all. And well, obviously, this week, we've certainly proved that. And this church, through the years, has gone through this over and over again, where things are not quite natural. People pass from this earth, certainly before we would expect them to. When I was, we'll say Nico's age, he's right in this age group of kids, I probably would have scoffed if anybody warned me that, you know, this could happen to you. I imagine I did. I still do, kind of a little bit. It's hard to realize that you're mortal. Again, these are some of the things that maybe I do fear a little bit. I don't long for my death here on earth, because again, it's a blessing to be here. It's a blessing that God gave to us, and it's a blessing to be challenged. But I do somewhat guardedly fear the death of my parents, because I don't feel worthy yet of being the mentor. I turn to them for so many things. I obviously fear my own children's death. You know, it's just not the way the world's supposed to be. A couple years ago, I actually got a good feeling here in my gut. Well, not a good feeling. I had to face my own, at least in my own mind, my own impending death, because when I had my sonogram done on my gallbladder, they did one of these things. We need to send you in for some more tests. And so you sit in a little room all by yourself without your cell phone, and you wonder what you're going to do when you have to face your children and your wife and say, I'm in trouble. Well, after the more testing was done, it turns out that it was a thing, and I hope I'm saying this right, is a hemangioma, which is a sometimes it appears on the outside of your body, usually as a reddish scar on people's face. But on the inside, on your organs, it's basically a whole bunch of cells that either aren't supposed to be there, blood vessels that are excessive or have kind of gone crazy and done more than they're supposed to. But on a sonogram, it would show up as a shadow, and it's basically not a problem. But it was there. I understood that fear during that little time of not knowing, and that fear of what's it going to be like. Some of us are afraid or have fear of speaking in public. I still suffer from this some. I believe more and more that God won't let me fail when I'm up here if I turn it all over to Him. Without a lot of notes, and at one time, and it's been fairly recently, if I didn't write everything down exactly and basically read a sermon to you, I couldn't do it, because I was not confident in my knowledge and my ability to express things, And I wanted to make sure that I said them exactly right, because I don't want to stand in front of you and say something contradictory to this. Well, the best way to make sure that doesn't happen is to know this a little bit better. Fear of failure is an interesting thing. I didn't really write anything out on this, because I don't know what I'm going to say. Because I don't have the fear of failure. I have a fear of success. Many of you perhaps know I've been visiting with a counselor. I'm kind of a strange person. Maybe you already knew that. Apparently, I don't, in my own mind, think that I deserve happiness. I don't think I deserve things that are good. And so, with this thing that they call a law of attraction, I think bad things about myself, and thus I do bad things to myself. After church, will walk away, because I don't want you to get to know me, because I'm ashamed of who I am inside. And I'm learning now what's going on, and the things that are going on is that I am my own worst critic. I am so hard on me that it's not fair. And I will succeed. I will succeed in overcoming this, because it doesn't go away. You just learn to cope. And I guess that's the confessional part. Fear of change. When I was an air traffic controller, life was easy, because I knew what was expected of me, and I just did my job. That's easy. It's kind of the same thing when you're sitting in your pew in a church elsewhere from here, where you had somebody that was a preacher, and you know, you very rarely participate in anything. It's easy to just sit in my pew and sing a song and listen. It's not a whole lot is expected of me. It's harder in a supervisory role, because now you have to know what's expected of you. I'm responsible for everybody underneath me when I'm a supervisor. Now, I don't necessarily want to say that I'm a supervisor at the golf course. I guess I'm still kind of a person that hides and does whatever he can. But I'm trying to learn to know what's expected of everyone. And I'm trying to learn what's expected of all you, so that I can stand up here comfortably and be a leader, be an inspiration. And it's not who I was for so long. I have one last subject on that, the fear of the future, which was probably what this sermon was all starting to be about. I fear, and you know, Dad kind of covered this a little bit, I think, a few weeks ago on a Sunday night. This nation, it frightens me where we're going. It seems to me, and maybe my perception was wrong because I was a child, but it seems to me when I was young, we were a little safer. Our kids were safer. You know, I used to, maybe my parents didn't know, but I used to ride my bike everywhere. You know, I saw parts of eastern Des Moines on my bicycle. Sorry if you didn't know. But, you know, it was okay. Or at least it turned out okay. I don't know if I'm noticing these things because I'm advanced in age than I... It just seems to me that the nation is turning away from what we were founded upon. We were founded upon freedom and freedom of religion. And we supposedly are a nation that still believes in God. And yet we have so many people who are trying to take God out of our lives. I wonder sometimes if we could go back and talk to some people who were in some of the greater empires of the past, some of the people of Rome, some of the Greeks, the people that died before those great nations fell. And could we talk to them and ask them, do you think your nation will fall? I'm pretty sure that they would laugh and say, how could we fall? We're the most powerful people in the world. So you think it can't happen to your nation? I don't know. I know some of you have heard of Glenn Beck, Fox News guy. And he said something the other night that really affected me. First of all, a lot of times he's kind of off the cuff and a little crazy, but I think it makes him endearing to me. But he's a believer in God, and he's a believer in this country. And he says, 10 years ago, I was just a silly DJ on the radio. I didn't know anything, but I educated myself. And now the silly DJ on the radio is taking a great part in leading this nation and remembering where it came from. Reminds me a little bit of the Apostle Paul, who called himself the least apostle, when in fact he was the greatest, or one of the greatest apostles, but he called himself the least apostle because he was ashamed of who he had been before he was called. So is fear bad? Well, certainly the fear of the Lord is certainly not. Psalms 111 and 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. And Proverbs 19:23, the fear of the Lord tendeth to life. And he that hath it shall abide satisfied. He shall not be visited with evil. So the fear of the Lord makes us wiser, happier, satisfied, and separate from evil. I don't think this is actually fear, though. It's more of a reverential awe of God and his power and glory, respect for his wrath and anger. It's an acknowledgement of all that God is. But there is a second type of fear that's talked about in the Bible, and that's the spirit of fear. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, for God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but a power of love and a sound mind. So fear doesn't come from God. It's not where fear comes from. Isaiah 41:10, do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. So all these fears that I've talked about, the future, whatever they could be, there's a very important verse, I think, in Matthew chapter 10 that talks about who we are to God. Let's not forget about the sparrows. Matthew chapter 10:31 says, don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. The lowly sparrow God provides for. How much more would he provide for that which was made in his image? Psalm 56:1. In God I trust, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? So to trust God is to refuse to give in to fear. Turn to him, especially in times of sorrow. So in Psalm 27, what I would like to do quickly is, I think it kind of works out like reading a verse in class and then explaining it afterwards. And what I'll do is I'll read the New King James Version and follow up right after that with the New Living Translation version of the same verses. The New Living Translation, a little more modern, speaks more like our language. And to me at times, it even though it seems a little folksy, I guess, it makes things easier to understand at times. Psalm 27:1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? In the New Living, the Lord is my light and my salvation. So why should I be afraid? The Lord is my fortress, protecting me from danger. So why should I tremble? Back to New King James verse 2. When the wicked came against me to eat up my flesh, my enemies and foes, they stumbled and fell. New Living, when evil people come to devour me, when my enemies and foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. David's talking about fear in this chapter, and he's talking about a life-threatening fear. Yet, even when his life is threatened, he gives that fear over to the Lord. He trusts in the Lord that he will take care of him. New King James, Verse 3, though an army may encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. The war may rise against me, in this I will be confident. Or, though a mighty army surrounds me, my heart will not be afraid. Even if I am attacked, I will remain confident. We are being attacked. We're being attacked right now in this country by those that would wish to take away our freedoms, especially our freedom of religion. When I'm talking about fear this morning, I'm talking about don't be afraid of what they're trying to do. Don't be afraid to try to do something about it. I receive emails from a couple of different Christian coalitions. American Family Association is one that comes to mind. They're constantly sending me reminders of what's going on, giving me links to my senators and congressmen so that I can contact them about laws that they're getting ready to vote on and express my opinions on those, sign petitions, even contribute money if I wish. I'm not out with a megaphone standing on a street corner, but I'm doing my little part. Let's keep going. In verse 4, New King James, one thing I have desired of the Lord that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my lives, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Or, the one thing I ask of the Lord, the thing I seek most, is to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, delighting in the Lord's perfections and meditating in his temple. What could be better than that? Verse 5, for in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret place of his tabernacle he shall hide me, he shall set me high upon a rock. For he will conceal me there when troubles come. He will hide me in his sanctuary. He will place me high out of reach on a high rock. For time's purposes, if you would like to continue to follow along in whatever version you have in front of you, I will read the New Living Translation for the remainder of the verses. Beginning in verse 6. Then I will hold my head high above my enemies who surround me. At his sanctuary I will offer sacrifices with shouts of joy, singing and praising the Lord with music. I want you to remember, with your enemies, with those that would try to bring you down, when you're going out, if you're trying to talk to somebody about the Lord, even the apostles couldn't convert everybody. You're not going to win every time. But you're never going to win if you don't make the effort. Verse 7, hear me as I pray, O Lord. Be merciful and answer me. My heart has heard you say, come and talk with me. And my heart responds, Lord, I am coming. Do not turn your back on me. Do not reject your servant in anger. You have always been my helper. Don't leave me now. Don't abandon me, O God of my salvation. Even if my father and mother abandon me, the Lord will hold me close. Teach me how to live, O Lord. Lead me along the right path, for my enemies are waiting for me. Do not let me fall into their hands, for they accuse me of things I've never done. With every breath, they threaten me with violence. Yet I am confident I will see the Lord's goodness while I am here in the land of the living. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous. Yes, wait patiently for the Lord. Wait patiently for the Lord and know that your reward is not here on earth. Your reward is in heaven. As I said, when you're making your stand, there's a possibility you're not going to win. And sometimes in the past, that's made me, angry. I want to lash out. It's not my place to seek revenge. David answers that again. And I don't remember ever reading this before. Psalm 28, verses 3 through 5. Do not drag me away with the wicked, with those who do evil, those who speak friendly words to their neighbors while planning evil in their hearts. Give them the punishment they so richly deserve. Measure it out in proportion to their wickedness. Pay them back for all their evil deeds. Give them a taste of what they have done to others. They care nothing for what the Lord has done or what his hands have made, so he will tear them down and they will never be rebuilt. Again, that's a more modern New Living Translation. I compared the two of them and it feels just about right. God will have his revenge against those that are trying to tear you away from him. Much more than I could ever provide revenge. So fear of death, failure, making a stand for the future, all these fears, we need to turn those over to God. God will stand behind you. He'll back you up. One of the reasons that we pray is to ask for forgiveness of sin. Though some more, some less than other, we all sin. And so this prayer is continuous. It's mentioned every time that we have an opening or closing prayer in front of this congregation. It's mentioned in all of my prayers. Forgive us of our sin. But to get this forgiveness, if you know that you sin, you must first confess that Jesus, the Son of God, is your Savior, and then be baptized to wash away those sins. We have a gospel invitation this morning open to all who would need to take that step and be baptized. If you're already a child of God and have other needs, you can come forward and we'll help you with them. We stand and sing our invitation song.